Hi, welcome to our podcast. I'm Mary Abazia, and of course, is Tom Spitali and Sean Wellham. And this is a continuation of a discussion that we are having about what makes for an extremely great workshop experience that leads to learning, hopefully, that's very sustainable in a company, not just a cool workshop, but you know, real learning, or what makes it disastrous. So Tom was serving up in our last discussion, the recipe for how we get to open people's brains in very different ways. So why don't you go ahead, Tom? And
he was teasing us. He was.
So I'm curious, how do you open a person's brain really, Tom?
Sure. We have a massive audience after that great teaser from the last podcast. Hi,
everybody. It always works.
So let me contrast it with, you know, like I think we called it the old school approach, right? The old school approach to running a workshop, teaching new skills is PowerPoints, in which we actually do use PowerPoints, but, you know, a screen, a long lecture, and maybe, just maybe, some applicability to the problems at hand, and maybe an opportunity to apply, maybe not, the concepts that are learned. We're the opposite of that. I think this is the formula that we have established that works really, really well. Take from it what you want if you're going to be facilitating a meeting. And Sean and Mary, please correct me or add to this if you can. But I think the formula is this. In any given concept that we're going to introduce, starting at the beginning of a marketing plan with things like, you know, trying to figure out who are all the relevant B2B decision makers, all the way to the end when we're talking about value proposition and how you build that in pricing, the formula is relatively consistent. Here it is. I think it begins with a very highly relevant case study example that illustrates the output of the exercise that you're going to do. For example, in an influencer map, some kind of case study about a company either you know or an industry that you're familiar with. It may not necessarily be your industry yet, but we talk about a case that is designed to get your attention because it had maybe an ironic or a huge result. And many times these are famous case studies that people could say, I know that company. I wondered how they were so successful. And now I see a part of the secret of their success. So it starts with that, but it has to be short, right? So it typically is a case study, maybe from outside of your industry, that is highly relevant and highly relatable. It then goes to introducing a tool that is typically very simple to apply, but very powerful, such that you can go like step by step and see the key principles of using that tool. Then I think what it goes to next, typically for us, I forgot. The very beginning is a funny, relevant, short video that makes people laugh, that is designed and related to the concept. Okay. So let me recap. Short video. Case study from outside, short case study that you have high interest in personally about the principle being applied, a short description of the tool, and then a relevant case study, something from within your industry that shows the tool being applied in your industry or in an industry close to your industry where there's a lot of the same dynamics, and then go do. It's like, okay. Go apply it to the very specific case study, relevant case study that you and your team of 4 to 6 people are working on. Go do it. I think that that's the formula that we use. Have I missed anything, or is that how you?
Yeah, I want to add to that. Okay, so that's the beginning. That's the prep to get somebody in. Then the formula is once somebody's in, we talked a bit about making sure that the dynamics that they're applying all of the things they have a business, they have a real business case, something that is very specific to their business that was usually pre-selected. And it's an outside in, it's not how are we going to make more product, but it's, you know, how do we go and open up this market? So they apply the tools to their specific business challenge, not to cereal, not to beer. And then during that time, what we're asking them to do is have insights. So when they're done with the tool, we don't really care what they do with the tool. We want them to talk a lot and really discuss, you know, whatever the tool is supposed to be bringing out in terms of that concept. But the insight that they get about their company and about their challenge is what we're striving for. And so we have an insight chart that they put that insight on, and we help them see that, you know, it's kind of not that good, or it's a great insight, and we have rewards for that. So we really incent that. In the debrief, we want people to very quickly talk about what they learned about using the tool, number one, and then what they learned about their business, and that's that insight, number two. And that's where the light bulbs go on. It doesn't go on as much as I like the way Tom described what we set up, and people start to go, oh, that's interesting. But a light bulb does not go on until they've put their hand on the paper and they've really thought through it about their business. And then somebody else in another business unit that's listening to the debrief goes, oh, that's my issue too. You're in a different business, a different market, and yet I'm trying to do the same thing you're doing. And that's those connections that are really valuable with a company. So that's my ad, Sean.
I'd add a couple. I think what we've described there is quite a step-based formula, which is a great starting point from concept through to case study, through to relevance, through to application of the tools, and so on and so forth. I think there's a bit, there's an extra factor to this, which is akin to reading a script and having one actor deliver the part and another actor, going back to the acting analogy you mentioned in our last podcast, Mary, that how you do that, this personality that you can put into the exchange, the shared connection with the audience, the integration of the idea with people's experiences are all so keen. It's harder to define that in terms of steps. So for example, you might introduce the concept. That's the very first thing. Here's a concept called segmentation, say. Then you might turn it into some sort of anecdote, some sort of abstract idea. You start to discuss it in ways that are relatable, not yet maybe get into a case study, maybe asking others to give some suggestions, maybe doing something crazy like everyone with glasses stand over there, everyone who doesn't wear glasses stand over there. You know, is this segmentation? Have discussions, get people active and engaged. We do an awful lot of that stuff, which I know, Tom, you weren't denying, but it also is not necessarily included in the steps. I see that as the framework, and the magic is how we weave between those steps. And every time you can engage, every time you can entertain, every time you can get people's energy levels up by participation and make the concept relevant through anecdote or even abstract before you get to a case study, those would be my ads. There's a certain X factor to it that's harder to define, but is the difference between just following a stepped process.
I want to add to your X factor that the way that you can get that room active is to the way that it's set up. You know, having pods is really important. And when we talk to facilities, often they're like, oh, well, we got to set up a theater. Can we just leave it like that? Theater is old school. It's where everyone's supposed to just listen to the instructor and then, you know, do whatever. But what you're describing is it's a party. It's supposed to be really getting people talking to each other and talking to us.
It's improv. Well, it's improv theater. Is what it is.
Let's describe, improv. Theater and pods. Like theater, when Mary says theater, it's like that where people are sitting like in rows, right? And it's not necessary. It's meant to put the focus on the presenter. Really, I mean, I think that's what theater, if you're sitting in a theater, your focus is on the screen, okay? Where pods are round tables, where the focus is jointly on, what's going on in the front of the room, but on each other. And I just think that that's really a key part of being able to bring this X factor that Sean and Mary, that you guys are talking about, into our formulaic approach. There's the saying, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I think that's just such the opposite of the old school way of teaching workshops. It's, you know, let me tell you what I know. Let me show you as an instructor how smart I am. I mean, the three of us are very, you know, learned and experienced people, and we can bring a lot to the session. But what I think we're doing is a principle that says, hey, let's make the show about you. You know, let's make the show about the audience. Let's get in and out in terms of the amount of one-way dialogue, what we impart. Let's get in and out of that in the most efficient way possible. Let's talk. Yeah, we have to. I mean, it's important that we bring the concept to life for people, but how can we do that in a way that brings them, as both of you are saying, brings them, the audience, into the conversation as soon as possible?
You've added you've added another interesting point, this structural dynamic, right? Because don't ask me why, Tom, because I'm not stalking you, but I was looking at a video of you delivering a session with me in India some 10 years ago, right? I was clearing off some memory sticks and I found this one, and it was you talking to, you might remember the session. And one thing I noticed, apart from that you looked a lot younger back then, because you were your style. And when you get a chance to observe almost yourself, okay, it was you, but I was looking at our session from a distance of time as well as space. And you're not up front behind a lectern or even given any impression of being up front. You're wandering, you're meandering through the crowds. Mary does this exceptionally as well, just always part of the crowd, part of the audience, and not having them lined up, having them looking at each other to some extent and being part of this. It makes such a difference. It's another one of those hard to define factors that you don't become the focal point. You become like the honeybee floating around all the different tables, picking up ideas, sharing, being in the crowd. And also the physical structure. Do you remember in Dubai, we had an L-shaped room? I'm not sure if Mary was there or not. Tom, you were there. But Mary, do you remember the L-shaped room?
I was in an L-shaped room with a company that starts with a G.
I seem to remember Tom and I talking and saying, thank God Mary's not here. She'd go crazy, because the only room they'd got for us, literally where we were, half the room were unsighted. They were around the corner. So we had to almost relay ourselves like, hi. So that physical structure, you've got to create an environment that allows you to be part of the group, not talk to the group. They've got to have line of sight and structure in a way that interacts. We also had another example of a group where this was a bit more radical. They didn't have any tables at all, Tom. Do you remember the sitting in little arches? This was in Vietnam. They took the tables away and they said, everyone sat there and there's people thinking, where do I put my notepad? And it's like on the floor. You literally have nothing in front of you. I thought that was a little bit left field, but you know, you've got to try these things to break the expectation. If I'm in a classroom and I'm in theater style and there's a lectern and there's a guy talking to me, I'm back at school, right? You don't want that. It's adult learning. You say I'm collaborating in a journey of exploration here or something similar, not I'm back at college.
I think there has to be, I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned over the last 25 plus years is to be flexible, though. I mean, it's just, you know, it's ideal to have classrooms the way we're describing, or lecture areas. But and I was in Turkey and all they had was a discotheque. And so we did it in a discotheque, you know, it was the round ceiling. So the sound was very strange. And we looked to be creative to walk out, you know, and have people work out the tables outside so that they could get out of that dome. But, you know, even it sounds weird, but our job is to make sure that people are as comfortable as possible so that their brain works and they can move around. But we've been in some places where there's no air conditioning and it's hot. And people try so hard, but by 2 o'clock, they've melted completely, you know. So, you know, dealing with outrageously hot or freezing cold, you know, it's like either hatching baby chicks or igloo, you know, it's like, so, you know, really trying to optimize it before we ever get there is to figure out what that room is going to be like, because it does have an impact on how people can learn.
It does. I'm so jealous that you got to teach in a discotheque. I'd definitely put the glitter ball on just for effect. I'd have that glitter ball spinning around for the whole
class. Of course we did. Of course we did. Of course you do that. Yes.
gotta give you lemons. You got to make lemonade, right? So I've got a glitter ball. Let's go with that.
One last thing, just because you brought it up, is music. Music. Yeah. It's important to set the tone. Mary and I debate all the time, what's the appropriate musical genre for where we are, you know? But I mean, music is important. And even if people roll their eyes about it, but they come to really ask us, are you going to turn the music back on during the break? You know, we don't tend to play it while they're in the breakout groups because we want them to think, but you know, the music in the morning, the music during the breaks, it just sets a certain tone that it's just another little touch that we've learned over the years makes things that much more engaging for the audience.
The whole experience. That's the key. Yeah. 360, whole experience. That's, I guess, if you had to summarize, it's don't think in one dimension, think in all the dimensions in terms of participation, environment, physical environment, yeah. Sound, everything. You got to consider the works.
Well, so I think we're at 320. So 360, to your point, is what happens after. And some of the things that we've learned over the years is to take pictures of all of the materials because we love the big poster so people get to work. Even though we have automated toolkits, somebody could actually do everything on their computer. But you lose that magic of people talking to each other. So we collect all the pictures of the people, the teams, the work, and they have access to everything afterwards because, you know, there's so much that happens in such a short period of time that it's nice to be able to go back and see what your team did or what another team did. They have all of the templates, all of, you know, that they could print out and use with their teams. We have the copies of the work that, you know, the slideshows that we show or the screen decks, if you will. So they really have every single thing, including videos of preparation, because we have a prep videos that have all the concepts on them, very short, that they can use as reference so that it sticks in their organization. Or if they forget how to do that segmentation, they can go back and reference it. So, you know, it has to be great in the prep. It has to be incredibly, incredibly relevant and amazing in the middle. But they have to be able to reference something in the end to, you know, have it available when they're ready to apply it too.
Maybe. That's the most important thing, Mary. You know, we can say what a great session. Everyone had a great time. They were engaged. They're having fun. It was perfect. Everyone loved it. And a week later, if the needle hasn't moved in the business and none of these concepts are being applied, then what is the? Then you are only in the entertainment business, and we're not. We're in the education business, the transformation business. And you make a really good point that all this is about getting in the best possible position, but execution is always a little bit more prosaic. It's always a little bit more like who's going to do what by when. That has to happen, and are they supported in doing that? So yeah, it's a really good point. Let's not get carried away and just having a fun time. It's got to be effective. We believe fun makes it effective, but you have to see results also.
Let's do one more in this series, at least one more. I think what we should do is we should talk about what is the ideal follow-up program, because I think we all have ideas about what leads to, you know, what are the steps, what's the rhythm and cadence of an awesome follow-up program, from cascading the learning out to other people that weren't in the session, to just, you know, continuing the learning from the people that were in the session who really need repetition and some reminders, and all the way to coaching up executives so that they can really be encouraging when people are kind of learning how and demonstrating the tools for the first time, which takes a little bit of time. Let's talk about that next time. If you guys agree, and we'll and we that's my teaser for this week. I'm gonna start doing
this. Wow, trailers. I love the trailers. Anyway, thank you again for joining us. And we just hope that you really have, if you're gonna have a meeting, that, you know, it has that magic that we're talking about. So thank you.
Thank you.